Hello, and welcome to Columboys, the podcast all about the cold, calculating, digitized world of Lieutenant Columbo. I'm Mac, and we are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friends, future events such as these will affect you in the future. If you are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable, that is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence, based only on the secret testimonies of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places, my friends. We cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friends, can your heart stand the shocking facts about Ben? Welcome, Ben.
What?
This week we're taking a look at Season 3, Episode 6, Mind Over Mayhem. In this episode, a scientist murders a colleague to protect his son from accusations of plagiarism. This week's murderer is played by Joseph Ferrer, who played the Emperor in David Lynch's 1984 film Dune, among other things. This episode also stars a young Jessica Walter from Arrested Development and Archer. But the real star of this episode, no, that isn't true, he's a prop, is my nemesis and history's greatest monster, Robbie the Robot.
I hate
that I have made fun of Robbie the Robot and also IMDb for listing Robbie as an actor. However, I promise this will be the last time I bring it up. I may not be able to keep that promise.
Yeah, it's okay if you can't because...
Created for the 1956 MGM science fiction film Forbidden Planet, Robbie was made at a reported cost of $125,000, which made it one of the most expensive props ever created at the time.
Yeah.
Robbie's domed headpiece includes several whirling doohickeys, more than one glowing thingamajig, and at least one articulated what's it. Robbie's light-up neon mouth is not utilized in this episode, however, but because depicted as a mute automaton. But for some reason, he's still listed as a goddamn actor on IMDb. I actually really like Robbie the Robot and consider it to be one of the most iconic and interesting robot designs in the history of film. However, it's stupid that it has an IMDb page. My pretend beef with Robbie the Robot is dead, but it leaves behind it a legacy of the two or three other episodes where I mentioned it.
I mean, that robot has more credits on IMDb than either of us.
That's true.
And it's a fucking prop.
It is a prop.
So I think your beef maybe still lives, my friend.
No, well, I'm going to try to let it go. But I mean, certainly this episode we can talk about Robbie.
No, I respect that. I respect trying to be the bigger robot and let it go.
I have free will and it is literally a piece of plastic. So I should probably stop worrying about it.
Yeah, I think that's probably. Yeah.
It's weird how much
so fucking weird that he's in this.
How much time is spent on this robot that ultimately does not really factor into the thing at all? It's like they got the Robbie the Robot prop and they were like, we should use this.
Oh shit, we got to write it in somewhere.
It definitely feels like it was a thing where that was sitting somewhere on the MGM backlot.
Yeah.
Paramount or wherever this was filmed.
Yeah, it feels borderline red herring.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's not really, but it's like, it just, well, I mean, I guess we'll get into it in detail, but it's still, I agree with you. It's so, for all the like, look how cool this is.
Yeah.
It then just kind of fizzles out like a sad, wet fart.
It's weird too, because it's such a, like, Columbo generally is a pretty realistic show. I mean, you know, aside from the realism of bodies and blood and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
but I mean, it is a reality-based show.
Yeah,
for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, generally, like it tries not to draw too much attention to the fact that it is a show.
Yeah, I would say it's more real. It's a realism show. It's about real crime and true crime. This is science fiction.
Oh,
the things that happen in this are science fiction. It involves this this Institute of Super Science, I guess.
Cybernetic Research Institute. It's a good name. I still wanted to call it Cyberdyne.
It is kind of Cyberdyne. But yeah. We learned that they are doing war games there. They have already created artificial intelligence at a level that it has emotions.
Yeah. Well, he programmed in emotions so that it Okay, let's be clear. When we see the when we see Robbie for the first time, he is playing chess against a boy genius.
A boy genius named Steve Spielberg.
Uh-huh.
Who they
Steven,
call
Steven. Yeah.
Who they well his name is Steven Spielberg, but he prefers Steve.
Right.
But,
is it Spiel? It's not Spiel, it's Spielberg, isn't
no,
it?
No, it's spelled Spiel. They're pronouncing oh,
they're
it Spielberg.
They're just deliberately
but
okay.
It is Spielberg.
Of course.
It's spelled Spielberg.
But he prefers Steve.
He prefers Steve.
But yeah, so like
it's possible that maybe Steven Spielberg pronounced it Spielberg at the time, or maybe
who
still
knows?
Does. Who? I don't know.
We don't know him.
I don't know Steve. You know.
Listen,
who
if you know
say,
Steve,
hey, if you know Steve, you know he likes
right.
to keep.
And that's how he actually
Spielberg.
Prefers it. You know, just let us know. But you probably don't.
Yeah.
Let's be real. None of us do.
Yeah.
No, but so they're play like the first time we see him, he's playing chess against this small child, and loses, and then flips the board in a fit of rage because the child programmed him to be a bad loser.
Yeah. I really need to break out a GIF of or a GIF of
GIF. It's the only way
of Robbie the robot flipping that chessboard.
Absolutely,
because it was fantastic.
It was so. Honestly did not expect it, and
it was really kind of amazing. It was so like sudden and violent. It
yeah.
was really great. And it's against a small child too,
yeah,
which is
that's
funny.
Kind of makes
and
it
the
even
kid
better.
Loves it.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, the kid is not terrified by it. He's like, I made him do that.
Yeah, I've made a vindictive robot. Kid,
see,
I don't know if you know much about science fiction, but this does not end well for you.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, this is why the robot uprising and that's why they banned thinking machines in the Dune universe.
That's right.
It's because kids did this.
Exactly.
It's Spielberg's fault.
Yep.
Thanks, Steve.
This is how you end up with the Geth from Mass Effect.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So let's talk about the actual murder and get away from Cyberdyne, though it's inevitable that it comes up again.
Oh, wow.
So in this one, yes, a director of the Institute
Dr. is... Dr. Cahill.
Is approached...
Dr. Marshall Cahill.
Yep, is approached by one of his coworkers.
Dr. Howard Nicholson?
Something.
Dr. Howard Nicholson.
Yes. He's approached and the guy says, hey, I'm going to report that your son is a plagiarist. He has stolen a formula or some sort of concept.
Well, so, yeah, it's like, I should have written down specifically what it was, but...
I believe that there was a formula specifically that was related to matter, something about matter,
mm-hmm.
but it needed a computer that was powerful enough to check it. And now that they have one at the Institute, the son has taken it, plugged it into the computer, proven that it works, and then claimed the work
as his. Right. And now he is going to be presented with this, you know, like Scientist of the Year award from the Scientific Institute, I think is all they, all the name they give it.
The kid feels super guilty. Like, it's interesting because, like, this is very clearly a thing where it's...
The kid, let's be clear, is still an adult man.
Yes. I mean,
he feels guilty.
He's a young man.
He feels guilty, and he is very obviously trying to please his overbearing, demanding father.
Right.
Who proceeds to murder the guy who says, hey, I know that your son didn't own up to this, like, did this and stole this from the guy he used to work for.
He basically says either your son admits to it voluntarily or...
All right.
Oh, shit.
Yep.
They found out.
Yeah, well, we had a good run, everybody. It was nice while it lasted.
Columbo's coming.
Yeah, so he basically says, either your son basically tells them, no, I don't deserve this reward because this was actually this guy's work, this British scientist who actually is dead now, but he had worked for him.
Yep.
Or I will, and in fact, Dr. Cahill immediately attempts to bribe him.
Yes.
Like, that is the first thing he does.
Right. I think it's interesting because, so we'll get into the murder in a second here, but I think it's interesting because it's framed at the end, to skip all the way to the end, it's framed as though this was done by the father out of love for the son, but it doesn't seem like the son wants him to do that, and at the end he reveals that he has plagiarized to the press.
Right.
And Columbo says it's
love. Well, he says
love.
It like, right. Well, he says, you know, to protect your son is what he says.
But I think that's inaccurate. I think that's a very superficial reading. I think this was very clearly done to protect the reputation of the old man. Like,
oh, for sure. But I think they are, I think they are bound together. There is a point where he says to his son, you know, I do anything for you. And it's clear that he would, because he basically is like, all right, I will turn myself in.
Right.
Rather than have you throw my son in jail, you know,
at the end.
Right, yeah. Right.
I think that's a different thing. I
agree with you that I do not think that that is the overarching only thing. Yeah. I think that it is a component.
Especially when he comes and like confronts his son immediately after the reveal and says, you've ruined me.
Yeah,
he doesn't say like,
no, for sure.
He doesn't say like, you've ruined your life or, you know, this will haunt you for the rest. He basically says like, don't you see what you've done to me? And makes it all about himself.
Right. Well, and anyone who's had like an overbearing dad can immediately spot those beats where it's like, it's not that there isn't an affection or love for the child. It's just that it is also part and parcel of this man's unrelenting and unyielding ego.
Right. Definitely.
And so it is definitely more about him than it really is about his son.
Yeah.
But I think he also tells himself that it is about his son. And when he is angry is when the facade kind of drops and he says the real stuff, like you say, of you've ruined me.
Yeah, I think so. So to get back to the murder, this guy, they're running a war game exercise late into the night. And he is alone in a control room programming the events that happen,
in real time, and he's got like a mic where he can, because initially he's shown in working in there before they're confronted, and so he only takes the mic basically to chide everybody who is in the war game to say, you guys suck.
While the war game is happening, there's no communication with the control room,
right?
I guess unless something went seriously wrong and they had to stop
and they had to like reboot, right?
Yeah. The war game is just a bunch of, it's like moving things around the board. And then like every once in a while, something would be like, oh, there's a missile attack in China.
Or there's troops moving here and that kind of thing.
Very much playing on the Cold War sort of conception of war where if we got into another war, it would be a nuclear thing followed by intense, you know, battles.
Right. And this simulation.
Navels and.
Yeah. When it's first brought up and when he sort of chides them, it is specifically in relation to the percentage of casualties in the Western.
75% casualties in the Western world, basically.
Yeah. Which is like, yeah, that's not great. that's probably pretty accurate given, you know, nuclear warfare and all of that. But this is very much the mindset of like the Cold War and World War III impending and all
interesting
of that.
Interesting note an interesting note that at the very end, they're bringing through a tour group and the tour group are all Chinese. So it is kind of, there is a little bit of like a war profiteering sort of angle to it, which I thought was kind of interesting.
But
unexplored.
It's almost like they just kind of drop that and then they don't
because that is an interesting thing, the idea that we're selling the system to both sides is kind of fucked up, but it's like not it is not addressed in the episode. It's just
really
sort of dropped in like, hey, this is kind of weird anyway.
I wonder if somebody thought, oh, that's a little character development of like, oh, he really is kind of mercenary.
Yeah.
But
it's not
really
addressed.
Fleshed out enough.
I don't know what the legality would be of the U.S. company selling something to a group that was at the time our sworn enemy.
Spoiler alert. It'd be bad.
It'd be really bad.
It'd be real bad.
It'd be really bad.
It'd be worse than your son saying, hey, I plagiarized this thing. Also, I'm resigning from the
treason
Institute.
Is definitely, they do corporal punishment for that one.
Pretty sure treason does not get you cookies. Yeah.
No. So the murder is, he programs this robot to take over for him and to input controls, which. Couldn't you just if a robot can be programmed to do this, why can't you just program the machine to do it itself?
Right. Listen, he could have just gotten one of those little drinking birds and just put it in front of the keyboard.
Yeah.
And
it
would have been slightly more believable than having Robbie do this.
Yeah. When Robbie is typing, it's very, very.
It's embarrassing.
It's terribly just mashing the keyboard. You can see it's hitting 10 keys at once with its. Like, pretty precise little pincers, but obviously the person operating them could not see the keyboard even slightly.
So I was just like, well, just move it up and down.
There's no possible way they could see the keyboard from where the robot
How many
was
takes
positioned.
Do you think they did before they just gave up on that?
Probably not that many, because it is a television production, so they kind of got to keep moving, you know?
Yeah, that's fair.
So he programs the robot to take care of the test. He sneaks out, takes a car from the motor pool, mm-hmm. not his car, drives it over.
His assistant's car, I think it is.
Yes, drives it over, runs into the guy.
Oh, I see what you did there.
What did I do there?
Runs into the guy. Actually runs him
no,
over
he runs
with
him
car.
Over with the car. Then moves his body into his living room, mm-hmm. kind of makes it look like he was entertaining a guest. I'm not entirely clear why he did that, because it also seems like he made it
he wanted
to make it look like
he did a shitty cover up.
He did a really shitty cover up and
like he stole the heroin, which was only marked by the chemical composition, which is to say not something that a junkie in the 70s would have necessarily known.
Right. I certainly have no idea what it was.
Well, me either.
I am a fairly clear-headed person.
You don't do heroin?
I don't do
it. That's weird, Mac. I don't do heroin either.
I'm not on heroin, but I mean like I'm not like in the middle of a heroin like I don't think that there are a lot of heroin users who are very into like the chemistry of it.
Right.
You know, outside of a very small contingent.
Hey, why isn't there a Breaking Bad about heroin? Oh, wait, because it's heroin.
Yeah. It is a little weird that he just had... It's weird also that he just had heroin in his lab, but not under lock and key.
Right.
Like, I feel like that's a fair... Like, it's weird that you could just have heroin in your home, licensed.
Hey, man, it was the 70s.
I guess so.
It was the 70s.
I guess so.
Like, how much cocaine was... Yeah.
Yeah.
Was
consumed in the writing of this episode? Not enough,
all of
frankly.
It, apparently.
Not enough. Yeah. So...
No, not there is no amount of cocaine that would have fixed that.
It's a boring episode. Anyway, he moves him into the thing. He lights a cigar for some reason, and then he leaves the match in the ashtray.
Oh, you're a genius, but you're not that much of a genius. Well, he does that, and then it's like, you know, the broken pipe is out in the driveway, and it's like
he sets out two glasses.
He
of
takes his wallet
cognac.
And his watch.
Yeah.
To make it look like it was a theft, and then dumps his wallet in a vat of acid.
Right.
He
which
steals.
Kinda, yeah. Which is smart, because, you know, it's gone and the police will never, you know, connect it to anybody.
At least you don't have it somewhere for them to discover. Sure.
Right.
And then he also takes the file on the British researcher.
Right. He just takes it out, which is, again, this is another thing where it's like, if you were smart, what you would do is you would open the file, find the specific
and maybe remove that rather than give Columbo a direct line to like, hey, this is the only thing missing out
because
of here.
The filing cabinet is so well organized that every single folder is labeled and there's like a typed
there's an index, but
it's like a printed index, so it's very, very well
dude was super anal about his entire
but then this file is just missing. So, you know, it's not the best cover up because it doesn't actually it doesn't even make sense within its own context.
Right. Yeah. There's no actual cohesion to it. It's not
like previous things where there have been inconsistencies with the inconsistencies pointed in a direction, because we've seen that before where there are purposeful inconsistencies left by the murderer to point to a specific
person, we literally just had an episode.
That's
like
right.
That.
Yeah.
We just had that with, Publisher Parish.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Where it's like the whole thing is that structure.
Yeah.
You know?
But this is not that. This is just a very poorly planned murder.
just a sloppy murder.
Yeah.
You know, by a genius, let's point out.
Yeah, I don't feel like at any point there is really any road bump in the way of Columbo. Like, it's just sort of Columbo following the clues
in a
very basic way.
The biggest road bump is his dog.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the dog mostly barking constantly. While he's trying to talk to the mechanic.
I have to say that this guy is not super interesting either. He's a little mush-mouthed. He's very like low energy, and he tends to like tumble over his words a lot. Like he would just be like, "Columbo, there's no way you're gonna listen to it."
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Well, he's the read I got from him was he, you know, was just this kind of like stone iron will up to a point.
Right.
you know, and I agree that like it. It's not a good episode.
He doesn't ever strike me as like passionate like, enough to have committed the murder. That's the problem, is that even I think when he's at his most worked up, he's basically just like, well, I guess I don't know.
Well, I mean, you see, like, and that's the thing, right? Is so the way that I took it was that like he is this guy who has this empire.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of runs everything this way. And it's like, and we get characterization from Nicholson talking about him being an overbearing father and that kind of thing. And then you see threads of it, but it's more described than anything. But mostly what you see is that, like, he's super magnanimous when he's fucking in control.
Right.
And when things are out of his control, which you mostly only see with his son.
Yeah.
Where his son is trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Because he is feeling fucking guilty about, you know, getting this huge, you know, prestigious award on the back of someone else's work.
Yeah.
Like, those are the points where you see him get angry, where you see him get manipulative, where you see him really bring it to bear. And those are so few and far between in this episode that, like, we don't really get a battle of the wits between them.
No.
The worst we, I mean, like, the closest we get to it is when Columbo has Robbie run the sim.
Yeah.
While he is showing it off to the Chinese guys.
But he just comes off as mildly irritated, not so much as like angry or like out. I wouldn't say like there's a way to do like in control that I think is interesting, and I think it's maybe just this is the wrong actor for this particular role.
Listen, I think we're in agreement. If this were Robert Culp.
Right.
It would be a fucking barnstormer even with the robot in it.
And I think that this actor probably would be good in a different sort of role.
I still like him, but I think that I think you're right in that he's too kind of even keel for what you want to see in this and what we've become adjusted to as a good Columbo
episode.
The way
it's written versus the way it's performed, I think, is too incompatible.
Yes, I think that's...
He's meant to seem like sort of that sort of egotistical, over-the-top, sort of overbearing person.
Right.
But I think he just comes across as sort of like just pushy, but not like... He doesn't steal the charisma in a room. Like, when this guy is sort of browbeating his son, I can understand in reality a person like that in that position of power overriding but in a show, I want that to have a level of like feeling and emotion to it,
right?
And it just comes across very flat.
Yeah, that's fair. I see where you're coming from on that. Like, yeah. I don't think it's the worst I've seen. I think we're in agreement that like it's not that he's a bad actor, it's just kind of a bad fit
for the role. Yeah.
Yeah, for the role and particularly in this show.
Right.
You know, and
I think because it's such a straight line, and also he has like two or three scenes with Columbo in the whole episode, really? Not very many, and they're very mute.
Mm-hmm.
Except for like, you know, the last sort of
right.
He has a terse phone exchange with him right after the control room.
Right after he says, get the hell out of here.
Which is about as strong as he gets in the episode.
Yeah.
And it's over the phone, which dampens it as well.
Right. I think the moments where, like, you have moments where it's a little too dialed down, because you have like where he calls his assistant in, and Columbo asks him something, and then Ross, who is this guy who is decidedly cast to be super short because of the rationale about...
Right, there's a thing where he is carrying the victim in, and he scrapes his foot against the wall, and it leaves a mark of shoe polish.
Right, but it's too high for Ross to have done it because he's so short.
Right.
But Ross asks, like, am I a suspect? And Columbo says no, and immediately turns to look at Cahill.
Right.
Who does kind of pause. Like, there is that moment of, like, wait, what? But it's not a big one. Like, it's so reserved. And I think you're right. I mean, I don't know what else to say about that. But the more that I think about it, just the more that it feels like he's too reserved for how the script is written.
Yeah.
And the script could have been adapted to accommodate his performance style, because I do think it's good, and I think it would have played out okay in this episode, but it's just kind of
I wonder, like, what exactly went on with the writing of this episode, because there are three, Stephen Bochco and two other writers are credited on this one, so I kind of wonder, like, what was going on, what the rewrites were
like. Who had to come in and clean up the mess.
Was it a problem with, like, the script on a level, and that's why they brought two more people in, or was it written as part of, like, a group, or, you know, because it feels a little disjointed, and definitely the sci-fi stuff feels plugged in because of we've got this cool prop, we want to do this cool thing.
Right. Hey, they let us use this, so we're just going to ramroad it in here.
Right.
Ramrod, not Ramroad. What is Ramroad? Ramroad.
Taking it on the old Ramroad.
Ooh, Dodge Ram.
We're
not sponsored by Dodge.
Not yet. Hit us up, Dodge.
Yeah. Hey, Dodge.
Hey, Chrysler. We're ready.
Right.
Does Chrysler own Dodge? I have no idea.
It doesn't matter.
What
we really want is Peugeot to sponsor us, you know, with the re-release of Columbo's.
That's right.
Vehicle.
Bring it back. Bring it back and give us one.
Please. Please. I would love that car.
They're probably less expensive. I wonder how expensive they are. Like, I mean, that one certainly is very expensive. Yeah. But I wonder how much they're worth, because they're
generally
pretty terrible cars. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, those mirrors are sure terrible.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how the rest of it
goes.
But
I wonder what a Peugeot from that looks like. I might have to check out eBay or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe I'll remember to look before next episode.
So I don't really have a lot else to say. I mean, the robot is in this, and it's nothing.
Right. It's like he uses Robbie so that he can go murder.
Yeah.
But when Columbo clearly has figured it out, he's just like, you have no proof. There's no way that you can pin it on me.
Right.
You know, because he basically asks if Columbo suspects him in this scene, and he's like, yes, sir, I do.
Right.
And that's when he just fires back with a, like, you can't convict me, basically.
Yeah, you can't say, like,
get the hell out of
here. This robot doesn't leave fingerprints, and you can't take him in the back room and beat a confession out of him.
Right. With a rubber hose, I think he even says,
basically, like, you know, hey, maybe this robot did do it. So what? You can't prove it.
Right.
Get out of here.
Yeah. And so it's the closest you get to, like, a red herring.
Yeah.
You know, but it mostly just sort of fizzles out. Like, it's still another, like, Columbo trying to stoke the murderer into a mistake.
It's one of those things where it's like, it seems like the robot should be the thing, because so much time is spent on the robot.
Right.
And the robot is such an integral part of the murder that it feels like the conclusion should involve the robot in some way, but it doesn't.
And then when it doesn't,
it
sort of makes the episode feel even more disjointed and busted up.
Right.
Because the actual conclusion is he's been pressuring the son and also Jessica Walter.
Who plays the wife of the victim, and also
she's also
the psychiatrist of the son, which feels like maybe a conflict of interest.
Yeah, I mean, for a closed loop system like Cybernetic Research Institute, it is a little weird that you would be like, oh, well, this staff member who knows everybody else and is, you know, a colleague of everyone else here is also your psychologist. Like, that's not how those relationships
are
supposed
to work. Like, she's kind of doing a Deanna Troi,
right? A little bit.
Because she's like an in-house psychiatrist, but she's also like friends with
everybody. But she's like a group therapy counselor.
Yeah, but also an individual psychologist for people who work at the company, which I guess, I mean, that is a thing.
That's a real thing.
There are companies that do that.
But it's still like, it's still a little weird in this context. But yeah, so because they... obviously, because they have this, psychologist-patient relationship.
They're very close, I think. In addition to that, I think they are very emotionally close, though it's sort of implied by this that there's something else, but I don't. There isn't.
There is definitely not.
Yeah.
However, that is sort of our reveal, is that Columbo uses it as a bludgeon.
Yeah.
He
says that he brings in this guy to give false testimony and say, which is, again, I don't know how legal this is to have this guy show up
and manufacture
evidence to arrest a person.
Right.
I feel like at the very least the son could sue.
right?
You know, the police,
like,
police
I do
department
feel. I mean, in fairness, like, there is motive that you could claim in it, but like, I mean, as far as like when he confesses that, like, hey, I
think it's, you know,
I stole this.
I know that they're like, police are allowed to tell lies to people who are suspects,
right?
But then when it comes to like, I've brought in a man and this man can
right.
identify
I brought
you
in
as,
this man to lie to you to
right.
see if you
that's,
will crack.
That's where it starts to, or like, here is some whatever,
right?
This is from the tread tires of your car. Like, that's, now we're getting
yeah.
into manufacturing evidence, and
yeah,
that is, I feel
well
like
the tobacco I don't
thing.
Think is manufactured. I think that's real. I think he,
it might be from his car.
Well, it's from the number six car.
The right. actual
the
murder
actual
car.
Murder car.
Yeah,
but I think that he uses it in the whole context to
right.
Pressure the son, and obviously the son responds very violently to the idea that he
yeah.
would have been sneaking off to like have sex with his psychologist.
The son doesn't have an alibi. He stayed
right.
in town to talk to the wife
mm-hmm.
about he's still feeling guilty and he wants
yeah.
to reveal it. So he stays and talks to her for a little bit, and then he goes back to the airport and takes like a flight that leaves an hour later.
Right, right, right.
Yeah,
but so basically the big thing is Columbo has the son taken away by other police and
yeah.
and walks out, and then Cahill comes out and basically is like, all right,
I did it.
Which basically is, to keep his son from being falsely thrown in jail over the murder.
It's
and
so unsatisfying.
I
because it doesn't, it isn't like it, he caught him. The reason he suspected him was from something very small, which is the cigar.
Right.
The match for the cigar was burnt all the way down, which is characteristic of a cigar smoker instead of a pipe, which is what the guy smoked.
And also the guy had a pipe lighter.
Right.
So he wouldn't have used the match. And
yep.
so Columbo was immediately looking for someone who smoked cigars. And so the moment that he met Cahill and he had cigars on him.
Right.
He.
But I mean, this is the problem with the episode is that it is just a straight line. It is there.
Right.
There's no curveballs. It's just
well, there's no,
figuring out the pieces to connect. It
the
does.
Problem is there's no point, like through the whole thing, we don't get the sense of Columbo putting pressure on Cahill.
Yeah.
You know, okay. I mean, and part of that is Cahill's, I mean, you know, his performance is very, as you said, is very kind of dry and very reserved. And that's why I kind of mark that as sort of like this iron will of just like not responding to the digs in any way. But you're right in that it makes it feel like a dead episode because
yeah.
you don't get enough of that. You don't get enough of the back and forth
right.
between them.
Yeah,
and
like you,
and the
you
end, want- like I like some of that, but mostly because he gave him the cigar, and Columbo said, you know, I'm going to save this for a very special moment because it's
yeah.
a Cuban cigar and blah,
right.
blah, blah.
And then
blah.
At the very end, he gives it back
gives
to
it
him.
Back to him and lights it for him.
And then they have a smoke.
Right.
It's very kind of a similar throwback to the Donald Pleasance.
Yeah.
Neil Porton assault.
Exactly.
But at the same time, because it's just a confession to save his son, and
right.
because it doesn't like come on sort of the heels of some amazing, you know, mind trick. But basically, all that Columbo has done is sort of extort him into
yep.
confessing.
Right, and that's why it doesn't like it's not the same as him hammering him into like exploding
right.
out at him or making this, you know, sort of fatal mistake.
Yeah, and when he says that he did it, he's like, all right, you got me, I got it. And it's
yeah.
not, it's flat. He doesn't
yeah.
seem defeated. He just seems like, okay, I did it, whatever.
Yeah,
like,
there's like a little bit of resignation, but it just, you're right, it doesn't have a build that
yeah.
that you want it to have
yeah.
in a show like this.
Because, I think the ones that are really good, it's because Columbo is, you know, he's got some pieces of the puzzle, but he doesn't have the whole thing, and then it's about building
right.
the links brick by brick until he finds that little tiny piece of whatever that makes the thing. And in this one, it's just like, I know what happened, and then at the end, the guy says, I did it.
Yeah, and he goes, I always knew it was you because you smoke cigars.
Right.
And it's like,
And it's like, oh, okay, cool. Why were
yeah.
we watching this then?
Robbie.
Robbie the robot.
That's why.
That's
and
about
so
it.
And so I think I realized that you were trying to let your beef go, but I am going to say,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure this episode is a total shit show
yeah.
because of Robbie.
Yep, that's probably
and
true.
And not as and I don't mean that like this is Robbie's fault.
Yeah.
But just because they were like, oh my God, we get to use Robbie.
Yeah.
They really just shoehorned it in there, and that's so much wasted time on. And don't get me wrong, Boy Genius is fine.
He's a good actor,
and I love the fact that he got to say, basically Columbo is like, oh, does your dad work here? And he goes, I'm a boy genius. Like, that's the best.
Yeah.
The fact that you get to deliver that fucking line.
And the fact that it's a boy genius named Steven Spielberg is kind of adorable.
Right.
There are good aspects to it. I definitely like his interaction with the boy genius. And the boy genius is the kid who played Ben in the movie Ben, about, you know, the one about the like army, the kid who befriends a rat and there's like an army of rats. There's the Michael Jackson, Ben, the two of us. Ben, the two of us.
I know that, but no, I didn't realize that was...
It's written for this movie about killer rats.
Oh, great.
That's your namesake.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad that I'm known for killer rats.
And I think he was on Dallas, too. And
other stuff. Okay.
But...
Well, I mean, he was good at it.
Yeah, he was a good kid.
I hope he turned out as an okay adult. I know that's really hard on people.
He did. I don't know.
Child actor, that's rough on people. Yeah. That's a really messed up time to be in that world. Other than that, I don't know. I have some notes. So if you want to fall asleep, I'm going to talk a little bit about clothing.
I nearly fell asleep while watching this episode was playing.
True, you did.
So this will be a good time for me to catch up.
Yeah. No, real quick, I just, in the initial, Cahill and Nicholson scene, I really love... there's some nice characterization just in their outfits because... They're both wearing three-piece suits, okay? But Cahill is wearing, Prince of Wales plaid suit, and then he's got, I think it's just a regular, light blue shirt, and then, a rep tie, which is, a striped tie that alternates, But Nicholson is wearing a three-piece, herringbone, which is a little more professory, old professory kind of thing. And it's also a three-piece vest. He's got a knit tie and, a button-down collar, which is a little more casual, a little more old professor. And then his vest is just unbuttoned.
Yes.
There's just this, disheveled look to him versus Cahill's, very put-together, very kind of composed presentation. And it's this really nice bit of characterization between the two of them.
I feel like that's just that actor, though.
I mean, I think in this point it was very much choice in how they were portraying them. Yeah. I'm sure there was something else I wrote down. There's a lot of 70s lapels. There's one I just wrote down, which is when they're sweeping the crime scene initially. There's a guy in a brown suit that has flapped pockets with shiny brass buttons.
Yeah.
And the lapels are wide enough to be airplane wings.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's a really great one to look out for.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot other than that. I just wanted to point those out.
The son, who's played by the actor who played Charlie X, the magical wunderkind from one of the first season episodes of Star Trek.
Yay.
I think he's dressed very well.
Oh, yeah.
I think him and Jennifer Walter look good.
Sharp looks. Yeah, he's got that. Well, he's also got that figure for that kind of 70s era of really high waisted and very close trousers.
Yeah, but a blousy sort of butterscotch top he's wearing at one point.
Yeah. And the last suit that the suit that we see him in when his dad comes to yell at him after he has confessed and resigned is really solid with the Tattersall shirt and it's a really nice look.
Yeah.
And generally, they've got some solid stuff going
on. I think we're
on.
Kind of heading into more the 70s. And styles are sort of stabilizing and getting away from that out there wacky, groovy 60s. And
right.
More into the more 70s that is sort of more buttoned down.
Yeah, it's buttoned down with that, but with the sort of exaggeration of...
Yeah, of points, basically. Yes. All the points are sort of taken out.
Yeah.
Except Jennifer Walters wearing very simple dresses the entire time, just a slip dress, and then with accent colors.
Yeah, but it's Jessica Walter; she can do whatever
she
wants.
Yeah, she's great. I mean, she's playing it very straight.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no.
She's really good in it, honestly. Yeah, I mean, which should not be a surprise. She is a fantastic actor.
Yeah, and she's good in this.
Yeah,
playing someone who is 30 years younger than her
Yep.
Her husband.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, there are parts of it that I don't dislike.
Yeah, I think there are some good performances. Yeah. I can't imagine it's going to be the worst episode. We'll see. I don't think it's necessarily the worst episode we've seen so far. No. I think it's just, it's a little disjointed, and it's easy to see how this could have been better if so much time wasn't dedicated to Robbie just because he is Robbie.
Right. And just sort of outlining this weird science fiction world. There's a point where the kid plugs all the facts of the case into the computer.
Right. And it does not compute.
And it doesn't compute.
Yeah.
Whatever the fuck, like this is back in a time when literally computer, like people had no idea what computers did, and they thought you just like, I'll just plug all the facts in the computer and then the computer will make those facts. Like you could just type into the computer, like there was a crashed car. This guy may have been hit by a car. Oh, there is a, you know, a pipe.
We found this on the scene. Right. And it goes, boop, 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 boop. This beep, guy beep, murdered this person.
Beep, boop, bop.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's not how any that's not that
how,
works.
That's how anything works at all.
Yeah.
No,
I agree with you. I think there's too much sci-fi in this, and they got distracted by it, and it dragged the episode.
It's written by a bunch of crime writers trying to write technical things.
Well, I mean, Lucas also, you know, it's like insert technobabble here.
Right, but I mean, that's done at a, that's a fantasy thing, not a science fiction thing.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, this is more Star Trek than Columbo, I would say.
Yeah, for sure.
In a lot of ways. There's a lot of blinking, you know, lights that don't do anything.
Yep.
There's a lot of strange consoles, you know. There's a lot of bad graphics.
I mean, I love these sets.
Yeah.
I love all this
they're
stuff.
They're great, but they're very, very clearly from a different show.
Yeah, and it's overused in this episode.
Yeah, and I think that there may have been a way to take those things and make them work, but again, because there's so much time spent on them, yeah, I think you're right.
I think the simplest route would have been, and this is the last time I'll say it, is that if Robbie wasn't a part of it,
sure.
I think it would have been easier for them to project to the whole, like, hey, we do super science without having a thing that was so glaringly, like, sci-fi.
Yeah.
Because War Games made sense, especially at the time, that they would be using every facility they had to really crank out and try to figure out how to solve this problem that was, you know, I mean...
Yeah, and I mean, this is not about nuclear war. This is the war games that they are doing are basically like, how can we win a nuclear war?
Right.
Which was a thing that people
exactly
were
what they were
to
trying
do.
To do. Yeah.
But
yeah.
It isn't interested in like the ethics of it.
Right.
And it isn't about that.
No, no, no.
Which would be a much more interesting like.
Right.
If there was some sort of parallel to like. The you know, there is no winner to a nuclear war versus like, you know, the sun and this sort of cold war.
Yeah.
Like there's a metaphor that can be drawn not too difficultly that you could incorporate into the murder, but that is not this episode.
Yeah, yeah. And also in fairness, hindsight is 2020.
Yeah,
we aren't the
writers.
Easier.
It's a lot easier to spitball this stuff, absolutely, than to execute on it. But at the same time it introduces a bunch of things and then doesn't have anything interesting to say about them.
Right. And most of them do not pay off.
And if I only criticize things that I could do better, I should just like not talk about anything.
Yeah.
Because like my own individual skills are fairly limited. I accept that about myself. This is an okay episode. I wouldn't say it's the worst.
No, it's certainly not. And I'm looking forward to other episodes.
Yeah, I mean, we'll keep going. Season 3 continues next week. I'm very excited about next week's episode.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I always like it when you're excited about an episode because it either means it's really terrible or it's going to be amazing.
It's going to be memorable. It'll leave you with things that will haunt you for the rest of your life.
Okay,
I have no doubt of that.
Don't oversell it.
I am not overselling.
All right, awesome.
We will figure that out next week. In 2 weeks.
Yeah,
in 2 weeks' time. Maybe next week for us. Who knows?
Yeah.
It's weird. We're recording this way ahead of schedule.
So that we can release on time.
Yeah, because otherwise this would be...
Nightmarish.
It would be a trouble.
We would not manage to get it done.
We couldn't do this if we were doing it real time.
Yeah, we're cutting that out. No, totally
no,
we're not.
So, that is going to do it for this week.
This has been Columboys. I'm Ben.
I'm Mac.
And hey, one more thing.
Yeah.
He who controls the spice controls the universe.
Columboys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Columboys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.